Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. We've got a really cool guest for the show today, Wyatt Kirby. He has a background in engineering. He's been a co-founder of various startups. Today, he is a founding partner at Apsys Labs. So we'll learn all about that. Wyatt, welcome to the show.
Hey, great. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So let's start off by talking a little bit about where you currently fit in the tech ecosystem of just all the startups and the builders out there. Where are you?
Sure. So I think we occupy a really interesting space because we are a software services consulting firm. We come into companies of all different sizes, whether that's brand new startups or established enterprise companies, and we get to really work across industries to solve interesting technical problems. Usually that means that we're building something pretty standard, not necessarily on the frontier of technology. But what I really value about our role is we get to come in and learn businesses inside and out and help translate business processes that are already in existence into instructions that a computer can work with.
So in terms of like nowadays, what folks are asking for, there's been so many changes to the industry because I do kind of similar thing, you know, on the design side, the product design and UX side, you know, doing it for 5 years, 10 years, you see a lot of stuff. But then there's been this inflection point in the past 3 years where a lot of opinions have changed about what should be built and what. So what are you seeing out there recently in terms of just the sentiment out there just for stuff?
Yeah. So I think there's been two really interesting patterns over the last, we'll call it post-COVID, really. We've seen a couple interesting changes. I've seen in tandem a real move towards an interest in generative AI. So that's using products like OpenAI or Anthropic to do interesting stuff with content generation. And the second thing that that has unlocked is a real downscaling of the type of business that is interested in custom software. It really, when we first started this business back in 2014, our main clients were funded startups who had VC backing, large enterprise companies that had big budgets to really automate their internal processes. And over the last 4 to 5 years, we've really seen smaller companies taking advantages of the benefits of generative AI to implement automation at a much smaller scale. So we're seeing a lot more small and mid-sized businesses be really interested in turning their processes that they run on things like Google Sheets or Excel or Notion into real true custom software.
Should they downscale, in your opinion?
I think it's a great opportunity. I think that you'd be surprised at how much efficiency you can eke out of taking a process that exists in a spreadsheet and building custom tooling for it, right? Even if you think about something like, we worked recently with a dental billing company, right? And they had a process that worked great for them in spreadsheets. But just by virtue of building a platform that had a button that took a process that was taking maybe 5 minutes before, and all of a sudden they could do it in 20 seconds over the course of 30 employees over a year. Like that time saving really adds up to real value for them.
I want to pick your brain for a moment about digital transformation versus like AI transformation. Mm-hmm. So the way I look at this is the first level is going from paper to digital or going from like stringing together, oh, we use, you know, Outlook plus like Excel plus Box, you know, some of my clients, and, you know, we've got this process and this person goes out and gets this and then they send it back to the office and then we do that. And then stage one is you build an application for them. And oftentimes an enterprise-wide ERP, and it becomes like kind of their new system. And they're like, oh, great. You know, we all have it in one place now. We don't have to go around to these different things. But then now with AI transformation, what do you feel is the role of AI in that? It, like, is AI just one piece under the broader transformation project? So is it just a piece or a nugget under it? Do you think it's a qualitatively different type of thing? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I think, again, we occupy a pretty interesting space, especially when it comes to generative AI, because I know it's something that I've already talked about a little bit in our conversation, but I would definitely pay myself as not an AI skeptic. I think the fun way I talk about it at parties and stuff is I'm a bit of an AI pessimist, in that I think that we've actually already mostly reached the crest of where this generation of tooling is going to get us. That doesn't mean that it's not a useful tool, but I think it very much fits into that one part of an existing software solution, right? And one thing that I really encourage the companies that we talk to is to think about, what is generative AI really good at? Because a lot of times we'll get people interested, they'll come and they say, you know, we've got this team of people and we want to replace it with an AI agent. And we say, it's not good at that, right? What is it good at? It's good at summarizing existing content. It's good at categorizing existing data. It's good at generating small pieces of text. It is not good at big picture thinking. It's not good at really long involved processes that span multiple areas of your business, right? And so generative AI is a very helpful tool that can be part of a piece of custom software for any business, but it's one piece and it doesn't have to be even the main piece, right? You've really got to have a business process that works with parts that you can automate in the traditional sense of automate, right? Like I said, like making a button that does the copy paste action for you or something like that. And then you can start thinking about, okay, what are the slow parts of this process? What are the pieces where we see a good indicator for us is where teams are scaling horizontally, right? Where to get more throughput in an organization, you're adding more people. We say, okay, is there something about that that we can make more efficient? And can generative AI be a part of that improvement, not the whole solution, not a person replacement?
So you're saying, in terms of that last example you gave there, the scaling horizontally, are you saying that AI is good, is a good opportunity to use it there, or not? It's not good at it?
Both, right? It depends on why that team is scaling horizontally. What is it that person is doing? What is that team is doing that requires more butts in seats to get more throughput? And you can ask yourself, is the work that they're doing something that generative AI is good at? Can we give these people a tool to make each of, let's say you have a team of 10 people. If you make each of them 10% more effective, right? You've just freed up one extra person on that team, right?
Yeah. So I want us to dive just briefly into the AI pessimism stuff a little bit, because I find it fun. So for the audience, I probably share many of the opinions that you do. The idea isn't like, oh, AI is bad and everything. It's just, I think we're comparing some of the promises and some of the expectations to the reality. So in the past couple of years, one of the things I can think about is so many things are promised. You've got all these sort of AI tech enthusiasts, tech bros kind of going out there and like, oh, you know, this process is dead and everything's going to be. And then, you know, a few years later, there's still a need for workers. You know, some of my favorite examples are, you know, there was the rollout a few weeks ago of a robot and it was called Neo. And
it's just right over.
And so when you first watch it, it's like, okay, this looks pretty amazing. And the way the commercial is made, it's totally trying to get you to think that this is an autonomous robot and you're picturing that its brain is ChatGPT or something like that. And it's going around your house doing stuff. And then in the interview, they're like, yeah, no, it's actually not there yet. It's a dude in a suit in the other room doing it all for you. So a lot of the promises are falling flat. So a lot of the AI pessimism is really just correcting the assumptions so that we could have better expectations.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, a less maybe flashy way to talk about it is just being a realist about what LLMs, the underlying technology behind AI, can do, right? And they are useful tools. Every engineer on my team, I use it every day because there are parts of my workflow where it makes something faster, it makes something easier. But like I said earlier, it's not a human replacement. And I wish I could remember the creator I saw who made this point, but I thought it was an excellent point. OpenAI recently made their first television commercial. And you know what they didn't do? They didn't generate video using AI. They went out and they actually filmed on analog cameras, right? On real 35mm film. They brought in real creators to make their own commercial. And so does that mean that ChatGPT is not useful? No. But is it going to mean that there's no film industry 10 years from now? No. It's going to be a useful tool that you should learn how to use. But part of learning how to use it means learning its strengths and weaknesses. And it does have weaknesses.
I feel like a lot of the excitement is around human replacement, frankly. I think that there are a lot of business owners out there far and wide who are imagining like, oh, yes, instead of having, you know, like a big workforce, I could be like a lone millionaire with like two employees just managing an army of AIs. And I think a lot of the excitement and funding is around that. And I think it's also messed up a lot of funding for projects in the past couple of years, frankly, like, you know, that investors might say, well, you know what? I could spend $50,000 for this project here, or maybe I could wait till the end of the year and spend $100 on a AI subscription and have that do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, being in a consulting role, really, we come in as contractors. I tell people all the time, we're a lot like plumbers, right? We're basically, we're coming in and we're fixing the pipes in your computers. And so we've definitely seen over the past 2 years, projects that we absolutely would have landed in the past get passed over because someone higher up in the organization says, I've got a cousin. My cousin has a ChatGPT subscription. And what I think is really interesting, especially having now been in software for over 20 years, I've been running an agency for 15 of those, is that this is really reminiscent of the big trend to offshore work in the late 2000s, early 2010s. And what we saw then was we were started losing projects because they said, I've got some developers in the Philippines. I've got some developers in India. I've got some developers in Russia. And I'm sure these are good developers. I'm sure they're great people, but there are some downsides to putting all your engineering offshore. And a couple of years later, we started to see those same companies come back and say, we've got a functional business, but we're just seeing like big delays because of time zone issues. We're having problems communicating our needs because there's like a difficulty translating just like the cultural context between the company that we run here in America and our offshore team. And so right now, I think we're in the early stages of that. We're losing projects as contractors, as an agency, because people are saying, I'm going to have, you know, Claude do that for me. And we've already started to see some of those companies come back around and say, hey, I've got a great MVP. I've got traction. I've got revenue. I've got users. But the pace at which I was able to build new features, the pace at which I was able to deliver value to my customers has slowed down the further into this I've gotten. The generative AI models are starting to fail me. And what we find is that they're coming back to us and talking to us because what they need is they need senior engineers to apply rigor, to apply practice, to apply experience on top of the process, right? So I think, again, thinking about what are these tools good at? In our particular field, software engineering, it is a great tool for especially someone non-technical to say, let me spend something up this weekend, prove my idea. Let me get the most minimal of MVP out the door. And then once they have proof, this is going to work. I can make money doing this. Then they can say, all right, let's bring in an actual human to like bring the human touch to this process.
To the folks out there who are founders and they say, well, you know what? I can't afford to do a whole bunch of, you know, stuff and to get the developers. I'm going to sit down with my ChatGPT or Lovable or Bolt.ai or whatever tool you use, and I'm just going to whip up something and that'll be my product. What do you say to them?
I say that that is absolutely great. The hardest step in a founder's journey is going from zero customers to one customer. And if generative AI, if LLMs are the tool that helps you go from zero to one and then one to 10, phenomenal. That is so, so hard. Scaling from one user to 10 users, 10 users to 100, 100 to 1,000, 1,000 to a million, that part, that's what I would bucket as LLMs, AI, not that good at yet. They might be good at that 5 years from now. They might be good at that 10 years from now. But those sort of big thinking, large scale problems, it's really hard to capture what you need to happen in the chat box that you're typing into. And so what I would say is if you find yourself either having launched a product vibe coded yourself, or you are thinking about doing that, go for it. see if you can make that hardest step from zero customers to one customer. See if you can start creating value for your users. See if you can start creating revenue for yourself. When you prove that, that's when you can say, I have something here. I know this is going to work. Let me talk to some engineers and see what they think.
Yeah. And I would add to that. I think that in the early stages for founders, you want to get team members who can help you think through things. So if it's just you as a, sort of a lone person kind of like vibing up a prototype to help communicate, here's my idea. I think that's pretty cool. You know, and the issue though that I see with these things is that you could quickly get to the 80% use case of like, oh, I'm looking at a screen and it looks like it makes sense and I understand the use case. The problem is when people start using it, this the permutations of how people use software branches out into 1,000 different permutations that you just don't think of and you don't expect.
Exactly.
Yeah. That developers have to think through the edge cases of what happens in this and that. Designers have to think through, you know, all the different use cases as well and the probable paths and how is somebody probably going to be thinking about this when they're sitting in front of this. So you can cut corners for like a prototype perspective, but you do quickly want to get a competent team to be by your side.
Even just as consultants, right? And the other thing that I would throw out there, right, is I think it's also really important to think about what type of application are you launching? What industry are you in? Because another place that quality of execution really, really matters is when you're in high security applications, anything to do with healthcare, anything to do with personally identifiable information, anything where you're taking credit card data, anything where you're taking information where you don't want to be the subject of a big headline that says 80,000 credit card numbers breached because, you know, so-and-so vibe coded their product over a weekend, right? You don't want to be that guy. So, you know, if you're doing something that is in a space where you're collecting either secure data or in a regulated industry, right, I would especially encourage you to bring in someone even in a consulting role. I think that some of your listeners who are in the position of thinking about launching something might be surprised how easy it is to get competent people on the phone for just 30 minutes and not get an invoice for it, just to pick their brain about a potential project and just get some input on, you know, what are the, as you said, the edge cases, the 20% that is hard to get to through a vibe coding process, but also what are the other concerns that I don't know that I'm not thinking about, you know? Not the biggest fan of Donald Rumsfeld, but what are the unknown unknowns, right? What is ChatGPT not going to tell me in this first conversation that I need to know about either, you know, how to securely store user data, how to create a backup system for my database that when something fails over, I can restore a backup, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and the big problem with these AIs is they'll always give you something and they're not going to push back like a human would. So if you go to a LLM and you say, hey, code me up a healthcare ERP that is SOC 2 compliant and do so in 1 week. It'll say something and it'll kind of act like it is. That's not going to be real though.
Like I said, I use these tools on a daily basis. And my absolute favorite thing is when I use Claude a lot, is when I'll have Claude do something and I know I can already tell just looking at its output, I'm like, this is wrong. But it will end by saying, the feature is now working and is production ready. And my brain is just going, this is wrong. I could just looking at the screen. I don't even need to test it. I don't even need to run it. I know you've done this wrong, but it is so confidently correct or confidently incorrect about its ability to generate final production ready secure code that it will just tell you this is good to go. Production ready, ship it.
And you would fire a human who did that. If you had a human engineer who honestly believed they're like, this is done, it's production ready. You'd be like, dude, you are not ready for this. Right. Like you don't. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a point of emphasis that I make with our team, right? Is that, like I said, not just me, our whole team uses these tools, but as a human, you are responsible for the code that we actually give to our clients. You're responsible for the code that goes out and runs on our servers. And so I try to really emphasize that sort of human layer of responsibility. Even if you're using these tools, right? Ultimately, you can't hold Claude responsible if something goes wrong with real customer data. You've got to find a human to hold responsible. And a lot of times that's another piece of value that I think we can add is that layer of human accountability, because human engineers also make mistakes. But it's tempting to say, when things go wrong in a scenario where a lot of the code has been generated by an LLM is to say, well, it's the LLM's fault. And I think the reality is, no, it's the user's fault. These are tools. They're used by users. And part of knowing how to use these tools, knowing when to use these tools, is also knowing when this part isn't right. I need to step in. I need to write some code myself.
Yeah. In terms of your speculation, just you talk to a lot of folks, I do too, but you know, I'm always trying to think about where are we on like the hype cycle, like the Gartner hype cycle of things. So everyone now kind of recognizes we're in an AI bubble. No one knows what's going to pop. But you know, when might you think, or how far in terms of time, in terms of whatever metric, do you think we might be from that sloping where the new technology becomes normal, where it's like, okay, we're over the hype of, you know, kind of like the web hype past 2003, people start to understand, no, not having a website is going to have you make you a millionaire. It's just a thing that businesses have now, right?
Yeah.
But then it'll be like, okay, AI is just something that we incorporate and we grow with it and we figure out how to incorporate it in our processes. But it's like this normal thing and it's past the hype. So folks start hiring again and doing all that. Do you think we're far off from that still? Or just in your speculation from what you're seeing? Or
sure. I'm happy to give you an answer, but I'm going to be really upfront and say that this is a very low confidence answer, right? Yeah. It's so hard to know, both because we don't know how the technology itself is going to change. I don't think that we're 2 years out from AGI, right? Artificial general intelligence. But at the same time, smart people are doing stuff all the time. Who knows? So I'm going to say this is a low confidence answer. I think that we are at least a few years out from the normalization. And the reason that I say that is what I think really makes the difference is when people start entering the workforce and getting real responsibilities in corporate positions, in small business positions that sort of understand the technology intuitively, right? So I'm thinking about if we want to peg sort of like the dawn of the hype cycle of AI at like 2022, 2023, 2.5 years ago, give or take, let's say, who was a sophomore in high school when that happened, right? And then when is that person going to get their first real job, right? That is when I start to think those people, they've sort of become members of productive workforces with this tooling always available to them. And they're going to just see it as like, this is technology that exists, that is available. And they're going to start to have jobs, use it on the regular, and they're not going to be taken in by the big hype that the creators of the AI tooling are putting out there. They're just going to say, I know what this does. I've used this since I was in high school. I know what it's capable of. I know what it's not good at. And so that's when I think we'll see that sort of long, slow slope of adoption as just like a regular part of business.
I think that's a really good way of looking at it, by the way, in AI native. And so what kind of rough age might be an AI made? Yeah, like sophomore in high school, something like that. And then where do you kind of, you know, time the metrics, like, well, when they get their first like real job.
So it's like 20, somewhere between like 2028 and 2032, right? So we're like, you know, 3 to 7. But again, I want to really emphasize that's a low confidence answer. This is something that we try to practice as people who work as consultants, as an agency, is to distinguish between this is an answer that I'm willing to give you and I know I'm right. And this is an answer where this is my guess. It's informed, but it's a guess.
Right. It's No, totally. So, Apsys Labs, who should be thinking about working with Apsys Labs and what do they get?
Yeah. I mean, the answer that people hate that I give is anyone, you know, the thing that keeps me coming back to this job. And like I said, we've been doing this for almost 15 years now, is the opportunity to see what other businesses are doing. And I really see my role as a consultant, as a software developer, to come in, learn what your business does, and then work as a translator to help you go from your business, your industry, to instructions that the computer knows what to do with. So I think if I were to try to narrow that, which is probably much more helpful, right? I see really two buckets of people who make for really good partners with us. And those are new founders, people who have an idea, but maybe not the technical experience to actually execute on their idea. And like I said, I will hop on the phone for 30 minutes with anyone. I will talk about your idea. I'll talk about the execution. Love it. So new founders, people who want to start a business, who have an idea, who have expertise, who have, you know, a niche that they know so much about, and they're saying, this tool is missing. And if I just knew how to write the code, we could do it. The second bucket is people with existing businesses where they really, they want to scale, but they're seeing that the tooling that they're using right now is really failing them. So that's companies that are doing something where they've got, you know, I love when I meet someone who runs a business off of Excel and they're like, this is our Excel file. It's 400 megabytes. It takes 2.5 minutes to open. And I say, you know what? You know what? In about 6 weeks, I could probably build you a web application that'll replace your Excel file. It'll be 10 times faster. And we're going to be able to start layering in automation, right? Those things where you actually like get on the phone, there's an API that does that, right? And so those companies that have an existing process that is starting to feel bogged down by the tools they're using right now, the software that they might be paying for might be free, right? Google Sheets has this problem too, where they're feeling slowed down by the technology they're trying to use. I would love the opportunity to just have a chat and see if there's a place where we could build you a more tuned custom solution for what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and the reason why the customers who have the spreadsheets and they're running their business off of that, the reason why that's such an awesome starting point is because you've actually already worked out a lot of the processes and you have like the knowledge and you've got an organized idea of it and it's ripe for creating a solution around it.
Exactly. And you know what? Spoiler warning to any of those would-be founders, if you do hop on the phone with me, the advice you are very likely to hear is, can you do this with a spreadsheet? Instead of jumping into building something, can you provide this value with email and a spreadsheet? If you do that for 6 months, you are going to work through all the problems, all the edge cases. You're going to know the answers to all the hard questions. And then we can have a chat about building your application.
Terrific. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been speaking with Wyatt Kirby. Where can folks find you?
You can find us on apsys.io. And no hard sales pitch here. Come check us out. See if we're a fit. Book a call with me, whatever. Otherwise, just keep listening to Thomas. He's got good advice.
We appreciate it. So we've got apsys.io, APSIS.io. And then I assume people can find you on LinkedIn.
Yes, you can. You'll mostly just see me posting about college football, though.
Awesome. Wyatt, thank you so much for being here today.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.